Welcome. Thank you all for joining us today for our second series in a series of three. This will be around developing a business case for your ERP upgrade. My name is Brian Storrs. I'm going to start with just a couple of housekeeping items. First thing, we will be recording this presentation and be sending it to everybody, whether you attended or not. We'll be sending you a link so you can go back and or forward it on if you want to or watch it later. Second thing, at the end, we'll have time for questions and we'll want you to put them in the Q&A section, not the chat section of the Zoom, and we'll be able to read them and then go through with them with Sean at the end there, right? Let's start with the introductions. So I have Sean Wendell here of ERP Advisors. If you want to introduce yourself real quick.
Sure. Thanks, Brian. Yep. It's great to see everybody kind of virtually through the camera. Hey, everybody. I'm Sean Wendell. I'm the managing principal and founder of ERP Advisors Group. So totally independent objective ERP advisory group, basically. Pretty obvious. But the key thing is we don't sell, we don't implement, we don't take cuts. There's no referral fees from anybody. And we've worked with a lot of vendors. We've done some great projects and some collaborations with you guys, which we appreciate. But definitely looking forward to the discussion around, you know, some really helpful nuggets, tidbits, things that are going to be helpful as people look at their business case, because it's not easy. That's for sure.
No, it's not. That's for sure. Right. Yeah. You guys focus just on selection. So that makes you guys just experts in that. Right. And somebody that really has a lot of knowledge that is very helpful. Right. So really quick, I'll introduce myself. My name is Brian Storrs. I work for Kainos. I manage our adaptive planning, Workday adaptive planning practice, formerly Intuitive Tech. So a lot of you might have worked with us with your adaptive project. We continue to grow that practice, but we're now a part of Kainos, which is a global leading Workday partner of about 3,000 employees. They focus not just on adaptive planning, but the entire suite of Workday, which includes their ERP. So we have about 500 consultants here in North America that do all the Workday applications, right? And we work with companies to select ERP, and we work with selection companies like ERP Advisors Group, right? So today, the topic again is how to build a business case for an ERP upgrade. I think the end users of legacy systems, they are the first ones that see that the solution is being outgrown by the company. But in order to get that approved and to get a budget and to get it actually put into a new system, put into a company, there needs to be this analysis that's done. They're not just going to get approval based upon just, hey, I think we need a new system, right? And companies like ERP Advisors, they help with that, right? So so Sean, let's start with just a couple questions and have you just come over there. So the first one, you know, what are some of the key issues that can derail an ERP upgrade?
Man, it's almost like what doesn't derail an upgrade? We tend to look at the world through the lens of people, process, technology, strategy. And if you start with strategy, there's definitely the need for the upgrade to align with the strategy. So I'm going to give you some very raw, real examples as we go through this today, right? Because I think that's what I hope that our participants take away from this is like, don't do certain things, but also do these other things, right? So we're going to make it raw. It's good. So sometimes we will have organizations, and I'll often say organizations because we work with lots of different types of companies and nonprofits, government agencies and that. But sometimes we'll have a sponsor who says, look, we need to change software. And we've been on this legacy solution for a long time. It's killing us. We got a lot of manual work. You hear swivel chair, right? We got to put it data into here and then we swivel chair over there. There could be inefficiencies. It could be customized systems that, you know, maybe we've outgrown, or the person who wrote them
tribal knowledge.
Adios. Yep. Right. Yep. That's right. Whatever that is, there's good reasons, right, why folks call us. But one of the first things we'll do with them is say, well, how does this kind of fit into the big picture? Oh, well, you know, we're growing 3% per year, and our market is sort of saturated, and I'm making this kind of obvious. And we don't expect that much growth, but we need to get off the system. So strategy, right? We'll say, are you sure? And they'll say, wait a minute, you're the first person that ever said that, right? Usually folks are like, oh yeah, you got to change. But it is true that if the strategy for the organization isn't really around growth, then it may make sense not to change because it's a big deal, right? So strategy is one of the lenses, if you will, the kaleidoscope that you have to make sure that there's alignment. Another one is people. So sometimes organizations, they don't have a choice, but they have to upgrade because of their people. Say they're bringing in folks that are relatively newer in their career, they're out of school, or they're, you know, maybe 5-10 years in, and they have a green screen system. You would be, well, you know this, you definitely know, but a lot of folks out there be amazed. There's a lot of organizations that still run their apps from a green screen or blue screen. Yeah. And somebody that's coming out from, you know, maybe they're 5 years into their career, they'll look at that solution and say, where's the mouse?
No, thanks.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. No,
thanks. Getting people to come work for those systems, right?
That's it.
Maintaining those systems, that's impossible.
That's right. Yeah. It's difficult, right? To use it, maintain it. But vice versa, you may have some environments where putting in something that's whiz-bang, beautiful, nice graphical user interface is just overkill for the people too, right? So you got to look at the people dimension here as well on what sort of fits the culture. Then you have process. And we talk a lot about business processes in our organization, that the more standardized business processes are, the more likely you are to find apps that support it out of the box. But like we were talking about earlier, some applications don't support some business processes. They're not made to support those, right? But they're made to support others. Like if you think about, you know, global financials or really complex financials, intercompany transactions, currencies, reconciliations, you know, those kinds of things, like Workday financials is great for those functions. It works great, right? Versus QuickBooks, that's a silly example, but QuickBooks doesn't solve that problem. So you have to look at the business processes to determine, you know, how likely are we are to find apps that match this, but also how complex is our business, right? If somebody's got a hugely complex, wildly crazy platform or business processes that they're running, there might not be anything that supports that out of the box. So they might be building custom systems, right? But at least go get a platform that you can build something on. So business processes are important. And then the last piece is the technology. A lot of companies and organizations I'm sure we're both working with are wanting to get to the cloud if they're not already there. Absolutely. They're insisting on cloud. But maybe they've made an investment in Azure, or they're really AWS, or they're not sure where to go. They don't care what the hyperscaler is, or they're going to look for the application vendor to sort of help drive that, right? You sort of have to look at your own technology, including the legacy assets. Again, are you at risk as an organization because you have these old systems that nobody knows how to support anymore? And therefore you have to move. So within those four areas, there's a lot of issues and risks and challenges that you can run into, but hey, at least we have a model to evaluate the risks now, right? And that's what we do, right? As an organization, is we want to understand what's really happening with the company before we say, yeah, let's go. We're going to move over to this new app. No. You know, understand at least from those four, I call it a kaleidoscope, right? Each lens sort of over, I don't even know what to say that is. It's like a kaleidoscope. You kind of look at each one of those. And when you look at it combined, you get a picture of what your real enterprise risk is for a change.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me, when you're looking, you're going into an organization and you're looking at their legacy systems, you know, there's oftentimes the solution that they're on. They have a couple of options, especially as companies evolve, right? They can either upgrade into the new latest release of whatever it is, yep, or they might be able to migrate over to some other solution that they're trying to move people on to, or they look completely into another vendor. Yep. Are you evaluating all three of those things whenever you go into a company that has a legacy system that has those paths available?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, again, useful nuggets here. just because the vendor says there's a migration path does not necessarily mean there's a migration path, right?
It's not always cheaper.
It's not always
cheaper. Easier.
Or even easier. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Sometimes it is. Like I can think of a architecture, engineering, construction application where their upgrade process to their new version really is like database stays the same. So you don't have to do the data migration. Business logic can get moved over. The UI is different. And there are some differences in just the way the logic works, right? But then you have to say, well, how much of an upgrade really is this then? So it kind of goes both ways, right? Versus like, if you look at, I don't want to pick on anybody, but I will. If you look at Microsoft, there's basically five legacy apps out there that all have different versions, right? You have Navision, Xapta, Great Plains, Solimen, and CRM that are all in that Dynamics family. And you could have Solimen from 20 years ago or from maybe 5 years ago. There's different versions, right? Right. Rebecca on our team's done a really good job of documenting if you're on this version of SL, this is what it means, right? Now, Microsoft also does give financial incentives to upgrade to either Microsoft Dynamics 365 Finance and Operations, it's a mouthful, or Microsoft Dynamics 365 Business Central. They're not that major, but there's some incentive. A lot of vendors will give incentive for those kinds of upgrades. But really, those two apps, those two platforms are very different than the old ones.
The marketing teams, these vendors have done an excellent job of making it seem like the same thing and feel, you know, like you're on Microsoft. I don't know what I'm on, but it's so different. All of those apps, if you have been in the industry as long as we have, they're all purchased apps by Microsoft. Right. Almost all of them.
That's right. Apps
that were standalone companies that they bought and now they've just called Microsoft, right?
That's it.
You know?
Yeah. And every vendor has a different strategy. So it is really, really important that a sponsor, the team does take the time to work with their current folks, right? To say, what is really going on here, right? Like, tell me for real, what does this upgrade really entail? Yeah. And sometimes you'll ask that question and the person will go, and if you hear, don't even listen to the rest of it. Just say, I need to find somebody on your team who can really tell me what's going on. Cause there is somebody, you know?
That's exactly right. I mean, they should be evaluating it. In my opinion, they should be evaluating it just as it's an upgrade or a migration or a new project, or should be evaluated independently. They should be evaluated should be evaluated as one move to the future, right?
Yep. Yeah. Cause you don't, I'm glad you said that, Brian, because I do think there are a lot of companies that are in this position where it does seem so obvious to just upgrade, but now is the time if you're considering the upgrade, you have to just broaden your scope a little bit and see what's out there, right? This isn't like, you know, we always use the dating analogy and all that stuff, which is like totally not politically correct. So we're not using that anymore. I got to find something better to say. Plus my wife was like, knock it off. but like, this is sort of the opportunity where as a company, you're really, or an organization, you're trying to find an app that's going to last you for 10 years. Really? I mean, the software vendors will say, oh yeah, we got you covered for the next five. But in my experience with our clients, they're like, I don't want to do this for another decade. Don't put me through this. Now, they may grow exponentially. They may change their business dramatically. Sure. Those things, they go super international, right? And they're in countries that we can't even pronounce now that they're doing business that they weren't before. Fine. Right. The growth drives the reason for change. But If we're really looking for a 10-year period, and I'm not saying this just because I want the business to advise organizations. Of course, we want that if it's right. But even if you don't hire an advisor, you really should make a few other calls to just see what's out there, because then you know. See, what we really drive for is absolute certainty that you know what you need, right? Then you're absolutely certain that you selected the right app. Because man, when you get into the implementation, and we do client-side implementation services. We don't do the technical work like you guys do, but we do program management, that kind of stuff. That implementation's hard, even if you do an upgrade. So you really want to make sure that you've at least explored the options. You don't have to spend a year or two to do that, but you really want to explore it just to make sure that you're certain that, you know, when you're in the middle of your implementation and you're running into all kinds of problems and your controller comes running in and, you know, and they say, look, my neighbor just implemented blah, and it was a lot easier than ours was. We should have gone with blah. You better have an answer there. Like, well, you know, actually we did talk to blah and they don't offer this capability that we needed. Oh, well, guess what? Your implementation is hard anyway, regardless of what it went like for some neighbor's cousin's uncle's dog walker's brother, literally. You know,
their business is different, right?
And it's totally different.
That's what I call that. It's like, that's how you sleep well at night.
There you go.
By doing your research, right? Yep. I mean, and when we are selling Adaptive, it's like we actually promote them to go through this evaluation process to make sure that you sleep well at night, you know, because you know that you did your due diligence, right? So last series, we talked about how important it is for a project to have executive buy-in and executive sponsorship and executives all the way from the top, all the way down. And if you don't have buy-in, if you don't have support from the executive team, that projects can really go awry, especially if something doesn't go perfectly, right? So, so you know, in order to get executive buy-in, I think a company like yourself is very important. ERP Advisors really helps, you know, if you're the sponsor and you're trying to, you know, work with the executives and you have somebody that is an expert that is working with them. So give us some examples of how you can help gain access or not access, but help get executive sponsorship for a project like this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great question. And I'm glad to talk about it because it's not as easy as you think it would be.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Well, spending money, you know,
you're spending money. You're taking up key resources. Yeah. And, you know, you're suggesting something that, you know, maybe everybody else in the company is like the most afraid of anything on the planet. You know, you got change. Ghosts, and then you got ERP advice, ERP conversions, change, you know, mass change the organization. Like, I don't know, scary movies where they fit in there. But literally, like, there's so much fear around these changes, right? That if you don't handle it correctly, then you can get really far down the path and somebody at the top just says, you're crazy. Like, there's no way I would do this. I should have asked you that question earlier. But, you know, look, I just had something come up through my church that I was doing something and I kind of jumped the gun on something and kind of went a little too quickly beyond where the organization was ready for. And there was like, oh, you know, and I kind of created an uproar. Like, we all can get excited about these things. And I mean, you and I, excuse me, we have had personal relationships with these clients that decide, that's it. We got to get new, whatever the enterprise software is, HCM, financial planning and analysis, ERP. And those people have a lot of guts. They have a lot of guts, and they really have a lot of our respect, actually the utmost of respect, right? Because we know what they're up against and what they're about to go through, maybe even more so than they know.
Yeah, exactly.
So it really is important that those people do sort of like, it's so easy to get on the phone and start calling a bunch of software salespeople. It's so easy to do that. And I would say you kind of need to do a little bit of that first anyway, just to start collecting some data, understanding what's out there. Talk to your current providers, see what they can provide, right? But collect some information, but know that very soon you're going to have to go to your boss, your boss's boss, your boss's boss's boss, which may be the board, it might be the CEO, might be the owner, whoever that is, to say, you know, hey, we got to make this change. Here's why. And here's some of the options or kind of what this looks like. Therefore, I would like your blessing to continue going down this path. You're not asking them to sign off and spend a ton of money. Don't do that. That's not if that's the first time that you're going to somebody, it's kind of a flunk on your part, right? The first time you go to these people needs to be, hey, I'm thinking about looking at this. I've done a little bit of research. I think there's some value and I want to keep moving forward. And I just wanted to let you know, Oh, that makes a ton of sense. My, you know, I was at a trade show and our competitor just mentioned that they implemented a new ERP. I know people are looking at it. So fine. Right. Now they may also say, oh, I was at a trade show. My competitor implemented a new ERP and they spent $10 million and they pulled the plug. So no, I don't want to do that. Good. Now you're at least talking, right? And then you can say, well, I like my job here, so I don't want that either, right? I don't want to get fired because I got us going down the path. But, you know, usually the sponsor kind of is a little more savvy and they can sort of differentiate a little bit. Well, that competitor or that colleague or whoever it was you talked to is 10 times bigger than we are. Or, you know, they don't know what they're doing as much as we do, but you can sort of just get the agreement to just look at it first is what I'm trying to say. And if you hit those roadblocks and those obstructions and barriers early and you can't handle them, that's kind of an indicator that maybe you shouldn't go too far. I'm just being honest here, right? But usually what happens is, say it's the CEO says, well, you know, I've implemented these before and I know they're a nightmare, but I got to tell you, I think you're right. I think our legacy technology is a risk. I think I can't pull data. I don't know what's going on in the business. I have to go talk to five people. I got to call IT for reports or, you know, we're thinking about doing some new things and there's no way that our existing app's going to support that. So I really appreciate you're going to do this. Go for it. That's usually what happens. Would you agree with that?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. I mean, the other thing that I think is so difficult to do between vendor to vendor is when, you have to cost qualify, right? So, I mean, you're not, the sponsor is internal. They might be a part of finance or IT or something. They're not in sales, but in this particular job requirement that they're doing right now, they are in sales.
They are.
Right. They're selling to that executive
to
do this project and why to do this project and what is the benefits that we're going to get. And part of that is cost. And one thing that, we've both worked with a lot, well, you especially have worked with a lot of vendors, but just seeing just pricing models just with Workday even, it's really, really difficult to get just that. How much do these things cost? And if you go to a vendor, you call up a vendor and you're like, hey, how much is it? You're going to get this really low number.
That's right.
I mean, you're going to get this really low number and you're going to get all different types of pricing models. You're going to get, different types of users and different types of, cloud and on-premise and all this other stuff. Right. So I think that, just getting this type of company, this type of project, this type of vendors that we're going to be looking at, these type of projects cost about this amount. That's what an ERP advisor knows, because you guys study these pricing models. You study how these things are costed.
Right.
And, you can accurately tell that executive how much to expect, because when you're in sales and you tell them it's going to be this and it comes out to be this, that's a big risk too. So you got the business case approved for 500,000 and it comes out to be 2 million. But, and then again, at that very end, the negotiation, that's where you guys are, worth your weight in gold.
Yeah.
Too, right.
Yeah.
So just the pricing at the beginning and there's pricing at the end, right? And there's pricing all along, right? And these models are by design complex.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, they're different. And Brian, that is exactly right. That, we do a lot of these deals. We're in 40 different businesses and nonprofits right now. Like, we've got a method that works, that we're going to get level of effort estimation, orders of magnitude pricing up front, to make sure that everybody's like, yep, that looks great. Keep moving. Then go to selection, right? And then in selection, we got it taped on how to send something, information to a vendor who then provides us preliminary pricing and then go through the process to get really detailed pricing. But it's not that hard. Like, people can do this on their own. And I do know there's a lot of do-it-yourselfers out there that do kind of some offbeat practice. And I'm telling you need to do what I just said. You really do need to have a orders of magnitude pricing that's fairly accurate. And I'm trying to think of how I'd do this if I didn't know how Acumatica versus Workday versus NetSuite versus Microsoft versus Oracle does pricing. But, you know, it plus there's other costs that go into this as well, right? You may need data migration assistance. You might need an external PM. I was talking to a lady yesterday who's working on a large scale SAP rollout. And we were talking and I said, well, you know, one of the change management mitigations is recognition of your key personnel, including incentives like money, give them cash because they're working their hearts out on their day job. And now they're doing, you know, this second job, which is really hard. Yeah, you might need to compensate them a little bit more.
Well, that's a new concept there. I don't recall any of our project team customers ever getting a bonus for successful, but
or maybe it's not even based on the success. It's just based on the effort that they're putting in time in.
Yeah, but I tell you what, it's a lot of time. That's
it's a lot of time.
Know,
that's right.
ERP projects.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, you can help with costs, initial costs, right? Which again, I think is harder to get apples to apples.
It is.
Than you expect. And also, you know, there's also scope creep too. Like you have a menu and that, yep, I need that. Yep, I need that. Yep, I need that. Especially with data migrations, you know, I need 30 different things. I need bank accounts that come in once every quarter to be automated. Do you really need that? That's $10,000. You need that, you know, you can help with that. But, you know, once you have this kind of, okay, generally, whatever vendor we pick is going to fall within this budget. You do a cost benefit analysis. Like, what are we going to get for that spend? So how is the company ERP advisors help with that cost benefit analysis of these companies? Because that is like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
What are we going to get?
It really is. And I think that CBA cost benefit analysis, it's what it the real benefit of it is, and I'll talk through this a little bit more, is that it demonstrates to others that you did your homework. So the cost side is, that's tricky, right? I'm going to go through the components that make up the cost right now, right? So how you get to these numbers, a lot of research. And, you know, we do a lot of times, we have people just call us out of the blue and they're like, hey, what do you really think this thing's going to cost? We think it's going to be about that much. Just don't hold us accountable to that because you didn't give us that much information, but we would gladly help people to go in the right direction here, even if it's not a huge project. And I mean that. But here's the components for the cost side. There's the software cost. And anymore, that software cost is recurring. And so it's the same amount every year. Now, after 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, it probably starts to go up. And it probably should. Even if you don't change the users, the cost should go up because inflation, right? So just know it's going to go up. But that cost, that software cost, is usually derived by users and modules. It may be volume, right? The number of transactions that you do, or it may even be driven by your employees and different types of employees that you have. Different vendors have different drivers, right? So, but just know there's the software cost. Good. Now, the next easiest cost to understand is the implementation cost. This is to firms like Kainos. This is to firms that implement the chosen software solution, right? And you can sort of use some very rough proportions to kind of get some ideas. You know, for every dollar you spend in software, implementation is $2, right? Now, if it's Microsoft software's pricing pretty low, but their implementation is pretty high. So it might go up to 1 to 10, right? Other vendors are 1 to 1. You know, I think probably this is why, you know, we're excited with you guys on the Workday financial side, is that your ratios make sense for a mid-sized business,
yes,
right? So maybe it's 1 to 1, 1 to 2. What do you think would be a good ratio for you?
Well, it's going down.
Yes.
I mean, the 2 to 1 is a little high these days. I mean, no. We're seeing, well, you know, it depends. I mean, Workday is in lots of different markets now.
Yes.
They were, you know, historically a larger market vendor and have come down market and have really, you know, have a lot of customers that are just using their financial applications, mm-hmm, right? And not just HCM and payroll. So it depends on which applications, right? I mean, HCM, payroll might be more FINS might be in the 1-to-1, right? And it also depends. This is why it gets so complex. It also depends on the methodology that they choose to implement, right? So there are some faster implementation methodology. The faster you go, the less you get, cheaper it is, more you have to do afterwards, right?
That's right.
So it just, you know, it is hard to say that. It depends on the method, right? And that's where, again, an ERP advisors would help with comparison, not only because you're really, you know, there's really two selections that are happening here, as you well know. There's mm-hmm. the vendor, which vendor mm-hmm. are we going to pick? And ideally, they have a partner like Kainos that is working with the vendor and presenting the overall solution, where it's here's the software and here's the implementers. Because you can pick a great software and have a bad implementer and have a bad result. You need great both, right?
You do.
So, you know, part of this, maybe we could talk a little bit about your selections of the implementation vendors, right? Because oftentimes then it becomes, you know, Kainos against a PwC or something.
And, that's right.
And how do you help customers with that selection too?
Yeah.
Because often you have to pick both.
And it's smart too, because again, when you're looking at that cost benefit analysis and you're looking at the five categories of costs, right? PwC versus Kainos is going to be a little different.
Big time different.
Yeah. Being an ex-Big Four person. So, but that's really the number two cost component is the implementation, right? And I think a 1-to-1, 1-to-2, those are good ratios.
Yeah, right in that range.
Yep,
yeah.
To work with. Now, additional. So, yeah, those are probably the easiest costs. Okay. Now I'm going to flip a little bit and I'm going to talk about recurring versus one-time costs. Okay. So recurring, we know the software cost is recurring. In our total cost of ownership models, we also build in recurring maintenance. Now you're not paying a workday maintenance anymore. You're paying the subscription cost. But what we have found is that most of our clients will want, I don't know, 10 to 20 hours a week, a month, mm-hmm. of just some, hey, help us with this report, or hey, help us with this whatever problem that would go to the implementation partner, but it's a recurring cost.
AMS, we call it.
AMS, mm-hmm. that's right. Account Management Services?
Mm-hmm. Yep, yes.
Exactly. So that's another piece of the recurring that would come in, right? So you have the software cost plus sort of this maintenance to the implementation partner. Now, you may do it to, some of the vendors have like ACS or whatever that's to the software vendor too, but it's really that same idea, right? Good. So that's good enough there. Now what I could go in a lot of directions, but that's what I'm going to say for recurring. One-time costs, like I said, the implementation, the technical configuration is huge. Then there's people like us in the implementation that do the project management, that do project coordination, that do data migration. We do data analysts, business analysts, like massages and margarita machines. Like we do everything possible to ensure it's a successful go live with our clients. Those are also one-time costs,
yeah.
Right?
And that cost lowers the implementation costs.
It does.
What I've seen, right? I mean, it lowers the burden on the company's employees.
Yep.
Right. So they don't burn out and at the end of this and, you know, so it's, to me, it's very important. Keeps the project successful and on budget and at plan. And when things change, there's an independent there that can describe to whichever party of why things are changing, right? So it's an important cost. And that AMS cost too, that's one that is relatively new in my world, but it's always been there.
Yep.
They just didn't call it something.
That's right.
20 years ago.
Yeah. And it was more ad hoc. But then the last cost that we build into our cost benefit analysis is a contingency. So, mm-hmm. you know, as the software services salesperson, I want you to close your ears, Brian.
Yeah.
But we always tell the client, like, don't cheap out on this. Don't do that. Don't say, okay, here's the budget and we barely made it and we barely got agreement. Like, okay, we're good. There will be scope changes. There will be more work that the partner has to pick up, the implementation partner has to pick up, or that folks like us have to pick up, or, oh, it turns out that the data really was a, oh, I got to watch my phrases there.
Yeah.
I almost slipped and said something. I was in Vegas and a big mess,
Yeah.
A huge mess, right? That now nobody around here has time. Our people don't have time. They're focused on client work, customer work. You're focused on the stuff with their day job, right? So now we need help from an external party to help us with blah. So please, please build in contingency. You don't even have to tell me. Don't tell Brian. Don't tell anybody, but tell your boss. And maybe you just tell your boss. Maybe you don't tell anybody else in the company. That's fine too, right? But you don't want to go back 3/4 of the way through the project and say, well, you know, we need 20% more money because of blah, right? First off, everybody knows you're going to ask anyway, but at least if you can plan it and talk about it up front, those are the 5 main costs, right? So 2 recurring costs, 3 non-recurring, which would include the contingency, the technical configuration, and then sort of client side implementation services stuff, right? Then the recurring of AMS, like you said, they may call it something different, but it's that ongoing sort of just maintaining the system plus the software recurring cost. And you're going to get a good picture of what's out there. And, you know, here's the other thing I would say, that this is a mistake that I think a lot of people run into when they're putting together these business cases, Brian, is they may be thinking about costs from their own viewpoint. Like, oh my gosh, why would I spend, you know, 20 hours a week at 200 bucks or 20 hours a month at 200 bucks is $4,000. 4 times 12 is $48,000. Say $50,000 for account management service, ongoing service. And the person's like, wow, well, my salary is blah. So that's a lot of money. Don't think that way. Don't. You have to think from the corporation's viewpoint. I mean, these are tens of millions, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars that are running through these organizations. Spending $50,000 on a contract so that Kainos comes back every month and gives you insights and assistance and optimization and maintenance of things that make your system run better is a drop in the bucket. So all of these costs, you really have to balance with just overall budgets, right? But then we can talk about the benefit side of the equation too, but that was a lot. I almost feel like we should just stop and drop a mic, but people are like, why would you drop a mic on that? I'm like, well, if you do it, you'll see why, because I just saved your bacon. Like, I really mean it. Yeah, that's what it's about.
Well, and that's the benefit. You ever go in and do an analysis of what it is the cost of not doing anything? Like, I mean, because that's what I think it's missed in so many places. Like, what is the cost to the business of not having a system that can keep up with the growth, or not being able to, or having to hire all these FTEs that are just supporting a system that we've outgrown, where we could maybe not eliminate those FTEs, but use those FTEs in more valuable things for the business, right?
You bet.
You ever come in and do the kind of opposite of a cost benefit analysis?
We do. Yeah,
this is what it's going to cost if you don't do anything.
And we sort of codify the we call it monetization benefits. It's the benefits equation. We will say, so for a particular department where there's a lot of manual work, if we automate these processes, what percent of labor do we save? Now, here's the reality. And I can remember back to 1998 was the last time I did a project on synergy savings where, well, we did have one client, but since then, but it's been a long time since we could go into an organization and say, hey, you got 10 staff in accounting. If you do this system, you can fire 8 of them, right? Those days are gone because the accounting department has like 3 people and it probably should have 8, right? But there's such a shortage of labor. There's very, very, very few organizations are so, you know, flush with people that a new system is going to make a major reduction in personnel. It doesn't, maybe for the venture capitalists and the private equity firms, they can bring together a bunch of businesses and all of a sudden they've got a lot of redundancies and they can let go of people. Absolutely. I think that's true. ERP systems, Not that much, but you will still automate processes. So you may get a 20% reduction in the amount of time that people are closing the books when you get a really nice financial system in place, right? But just like you said, Brian, that 20%, right? We can actually quantify that because we can say, yeah, the loaded average cost of an accounting senior and maybe some pretty, you know, maybe we had one international business we went with Workday on where their accounting people were incredible. They were all super savvy and their salaries were pretty high, you know? So maybe it's 150 average divided by, you know, 2000 to come up with, you know, a weekly or even just to just come up with an hourly rate of what these people get paid on an hourly basis, $50, $60, $70. Now say it's 70 with fully loaded, maybe it's 80. And we can say, you know, here's your overall spend, save 20% at $80 an hour per month, whatever. There's a number, right? Or per year, we can come up with a number. And that's what's called a soft benefit. That you're not going to have the accounting department's going to say, okay, I'm going to promise you that I'm going to deliver 20% reduction because of your system. They're not going to do that, right? But would the warehouse inventory management people be willing to do that for inventory carrying costs if they had better insight into where their inventory is? Or purchasing can reduce purchase costs by now having more minimum order quantities because they got like 20 or we have one client that's got 50 different locations that are ordering from the same supplier. And we're just completely losing on minimum order quantity discounts, right? Yeah, yeah. So, but there are, those are more hard benefits, right? For a services firm, for the companies that you guys are talking to for financials, we usually see three major benefits. One is a reduction in, again, sort of a labor reduction, but it's, again, it's more of like a, hey, we can take 5% out. So maybe it is 10 people. Maybe we can take out one person. Mm-hmm. Better yet, we can take that one person and put them towards more strategic activities, right? That's the goal. That's the first one. The second benefit is around more enterprise data available in real time or close to, more accurate with drill down and more just overall enterprise insight, right? Financial. So that leads to better, more profitable decisions. Now, if we have that information as a team, can we sign up for a 1% increase in EBITDA? Oh, easily. I mean, like if you could show me where anything, you know, what regions around the country are selling more, where's the profit product margin is better, you know, budget versus actual, which departments are going over budget and why. And now I can get on top of that instead of waiting for the end of the month when I get this huge bill.
Yeah, sure.
I can increase EBITDA by 1%. Okay. But if your EBITDA is, you know, 10 million and 1% is what? 10,000, 100,000, 10,000. Oh, times three, there's $30,000 of savings we just got to the bottom line. Right. Now, if your EBITDA is bigger or your volume is bigger and we're doing these little incremental changes, you know, that's where these benefits start to add up. So like I said, there is usually some kind of a labor, a redeployment. There's always an increase in EBITDA. And then the third thing that comes in is there are reductions of hires in the future. This is a really important one that people forget about. Like, okay, accounting, how many people are in your budget for next year? Well, we're at 10 and we're going to have to go to 15 because, you know, we got more transactions and stuff. Okay. So now if you use these systems, how many more people do you really need? Oh, none. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Five people, $100,000 fully loaded, $500,000 times three, that's $1.5 million. Over three years, we're going to save $1.5 million because of the system? Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe we're not going to eliminate all five of those, but maybe we eliminate two of them. You know, there's several hundred thousand dollars. That's how you build a sustainable business case.
Right.
Very conservative. Man, I'm like yapping. I hope people are still awake, Brian. Are you still awake?
I'm still awake.
You're interested.
This is really true. This is what people need to be. This is what's hard to do too. Right. Yeah. And it's what's hard for an internal advocate to present to an executive team. And it's much easier for an outside firm to come in and do the analysis and present that. That's, I think, that is a big value of an ERP advisor's type that they bring to your customers. Right. Yeah. And, you know, and not to mention just like you said it earlier, the recruiting factor, Because let's be honest, like resources, employees, it's competitive out there in every market, like getting people to come work for you. And if they are on, you're an account, this is just, I mean, I guarantee you, if you're looking at job A and job B, and job A is on Workday financials and everything's automated and everything, and you're doing mostly the analysis part of your job.
Yep.
And job B, they're using QuickBooks and you know, some other whatever reporting system that it needs to be manually uploaded, and they're going to be spending most of their time reconciling and ticking and tying and gathering data and putting things together, and the grunt work of the job. That's of right. That position, right? So let's say 5% of this job is the grunt work and 65% of this job is the grunt work, and you know, you're going to pick this one.
That's right.
You're gonna, if you're in a new system like Workday, and you can use that in your favor when you're recruiting folks to come work for your company. I don't know if everybody pays attention to that, but I mean, that's, you know, it is very competitive. Everybody knows that.
Here's a little like insider tip sometimes, because sometimes for our clients, we want to understand what their competitors are using for apps.
Yeah.
We go to job ads.
Yeah.
Because the job ads, they almost for accounting, they'll say, okay, you know, prefer experience in Oracle E-Business Suite or whatever the application is. So you can see what the company's using. So the recruits almost always know what those apps are. And I do think it makes a difference. And what we do is we capture that as a change management risk, which is exactly what you said. What's the risk of not changing? And by the time you do the costs, the benefits, and really are real about the change management risk, man, you got a nice business case. And it should just stand on its own, where everybody looks at it and goes, oh God, we can't not do this. And that's kind of where you want everybody, because you're about to ask them to go through a really hard experience.
Absolutely.
And if you have that, you're golden.
Yeah. Yeah. So last question here, just a little bit brief on just where the software requirements fit into the ERE upgrade analysis that you're putting together.
Much later than most people think.
Yeah.
It's very, very interesting. I think it's because a lot of people have experience, you know, these sponsors, right? These are like the people with the sword and the shield. We're ready to go get an ERP, you know. I think those people have IT backgrounds, maybe functional analysts, sort of like they're a little more technical about them. And they're like, oh my gosh, where do I start? Requirements. I always start with requirements. That's what the PMI says, you know, Project Management Institute, or that's what I did when I was an analyst, you know, working for an implementation partner or whatever. I just start with requirements. I'll tell you that if you have wasted a lot of time, including your own and your other people's time, if you go like, you know, you're talking with all these people and you're getting all these requirements and people are starting to talk about this and that. And, you know, you meet just do the math in terms of your own time. Let's say there's 8 different functional areas that are going to be impacted by the new software. So you go to 8 different groups. Well, the first time you go to the first group, they have to reschedule. Okay. So now you don't do that meeting. Then you go to the second group and they don't know what you're talking about. They're like, I'm so busy. I just blah. No. We need to do a subsequent meeting. So you get 8 meetings that can turn into like 50 meetings easily. Mm-hmm. And then you go to the executive sponsor, like I told you to do earlier, but you didn't. You did all those meetings first. So you go to the executive sponsor. They're like, we're not going to do a new ERP. We're focused on buying a new company right now. Well, I just talked to, I had 50 different meetings on gathering requirements. Well, you should have talked to me first.
I've seen that quite a few times. You're like, yeah, right hand isn't talking to the left hand, and the left hand is the ones that are buying off on this, right? So you should have been talking to the left hand this whole time.
Do the cost benefit analysis. Of course you need to understand if HR is in or out, or purchasing, or financials and multi-company. I mean, you got to that's why we call them the needs. Get the high level needs first so you can get some decent estimation on cost. Go through, get everybody saying, all right, you know, we got to do this. Bam. That's when you start defining your requirements, but not just requirements, but define it a demo script. Mm. So don't just say we need blah, blah, blah. Like, no, no. I want to see the flow for all of these different areas from beginning to end and write it out very meticulously. Show this, 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 this. So it's still requirements. And, you know, from the vendor's perspective, sometimes I'm like, oh God, I'm going to show you all that stuff. And it's sort of like, yeah, because that is what we're going to do in the app. Now you're in good shape. Now you've got like really good definition of what you need and you're ready for that next level, but don't go there until you have the high level first.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good.
It's so funny. Well, it's not funny. You walk out of those meetings and you know that you talk to the wrong person the entire time. And it's like the finger pointing in the parking lot and the yelling at each other about who got a sock into that one, should have been talking to that one. And it's like, that's when you want an ERP advisor to be in the middle of this, right?
I mean, I do have to make this last point. I know we're wrapping up here. I mean, we only work with you guys, right? We're only as good, just like we were talking about before the call, as our implementation partners and our software vendors. If we have software vendors, and we have one in particular, that's like, you don't ever select us, so we don't really want to be part of your deals. We actually had another one do that this week to us, and we were able to send an email over to our client who they told that to. No, no, no. We've done 4 deals in the last 2 years with this software vendor. So that's just not true. That's easy. But the real hard times are when they don't get selected for real, right? Okay. Just even though you're only going to do this once in 10 years, this is from the client side, please treat the software vendors and the implementation partners with respect. You are betting your job on these guys. So just don't bring them in unless you're really ready, right? Don't wait till it's too late also, right? You have to think with respect for your partners, just like you would with a friend, because you know, that's what you guys become really good friends with these clients. That's why we like working with you guys, and you have their back throughout the whole thing. They don't even know how much they're relying on you guys. So please treat the vendors, the software vendors, with respect.
Absolutely. And the implementation.
I mean, even more so, almost more important. It actually is more important.
Yeah. I mean, we're in a scenario right now where, I mean, Kainos is quality, right? And we're not always the low cost, because we're always trying to get at the actual requirements and what it actually takes. And you know, we're going to stand behind, you know, the years of experience that we have in doing these projects, and we're not going to skimp. We're going to lose before we skimp. And we've done that a number of times. And we have a scenario where we weren't the low cost vendor. We knew that our bid was accurate, and then they chose another vendor. They're double what it was. Exactly. Those nightmare scenarios. Yeah. They're double of what it was supposed to be. They're long past over where they're supposed to be. And they're coming back to us and asking us to come back in. Right. Wow. And then, you know, reevaluate the situation, right? So you just never know. And you know, they might, you know, you might need them.
Might call you back. That's right.
No, and it's just good business, no matter. It's karma, really, you know.
It is. Yeah.
So with that, let's see if we have any questions in the Q&A that we might get to.
So just a reminder, just to repeat it back. But can you use the same methodology when selecting a solution like an HCM or an FP&A solution that you would when selecting?
Oh, that's a great question. So the question is in the third section of this series, we're going to talk about your actual process that you go through, right? So this question is there's various selections that you help. There's FP&A type solutions like Adaptive. Okay. There's ERP solutions, there's HCM and payroll solutions. Is what is different in your process? I mean, there's smaller projects. I mean, that's the first thing. I mean, some are bigger and smaller, exactly. Right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I would assume that steps are probably not, I would hope at least that all the steps are not the same for all, right?
That's right. Yeah, there is a basic methodology like that cost benefit analysis that I just gave. It is different for a FP&A, financial planning analysis, enterprise performance management, corporate performance management, whatever you want to call those kinds of solutions, right? It is going to be different for that versus HCM. But the costs, the 5 costs are absolutely still the same types of costs, right? the benefits are going to be different. For an FP&A solution, you might look at the benefit of getting the annual budget done faster. You might look at the benefits of being able to reforecast faster. You might also look at benefits around building other kinds of enterprise models that today you can't, and you're just shooting in the dark, right? So there are benefits that are very different than an HCM solution, where the benefits really rely more around employee satisfaction, increasing employee retention because of an HCM, which really only about Workday, you can actually say that's real, by the way.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, I'm pretty objective. I'm super objective, but that's kind of true. But you know, but you're still going to do your costs. You're still going to do your benefits. You're still going to do your change management sort of assessment, right? As part of the business case, right? The process is similar in that you are going to do your demonstration scripts and run your multiple demos. We'll talk more about that in our next series on sort of what that looks like. But the content is very different. The requirements, the use cases are very different because your users are different kinds of people. But I'm glad that question came up, because everything that we said today in terms of the business case is actually very similar.
Yeah, right, right. Okay.
Yeah, and then how would you manage the fears associated with losing employees as a result of the upgrade? Not having to get rid of them, but those employees that are going to leave.
Yeah, yeah, right. Well, absolutely. So the question is around how to manage the internal employee fears of change, right? You mentioned the green screen thing. And the thing about systems, like we both are from JD Edwards, which was initially on a green screen. It's the first system, and then it's evolved, but the old system is still in the market, not being sold, but you know what I mean? It's still in the market.
Tons.
And it's because of this, because there's people that know it and they don't want to change, and they won't change, and they'll fight it and derail it every step of the way because of their fear.
Right.
But those systems might not be the right for the business. So how do you handle that?
Even this morning, we have a client that we're implementing a new system with. We're on the client side, implementation services, and one department doesn't like the new app after the prototyping, after basically sort of the basic walkthroughs. And I asked my guy, like, what is it? Is it the app or is it the person? He said, the person. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, here's the thing, and again, I've lived through a lot, I've experienced a lot, I've gotten yelled at a lot for making the wrong decision, I've gotten praised for making good decisions. It might not be such a bad thing to lose some people through the ERP implementation, right? There's if this gets more into philosophy of how you make a right decision just in life. I look at what's the greater good. And, you know, if we look at a vaccine, right, we're not going to get into that. But like if testing a vaccine, there are true people that in the test that don't make it, but the vaccine works for millions and millions and millions of people. It's a horrific thing to say, but that kind of is the greater good, right? So in ERP implementations, I have to look at that to sleep well at night to know that person in purchasing is wrong. This app works. It meets their requirements. It is the greatest good for this organization, even for the purchasing department itself.
Yeah.
We got to get this person out of here, because otherwise they're going to start saying bad things about the project. Like I told my guy this morning, you know, what if they run into the CEO running to the restroom or at the coffee shop and say, oh, how's the project going? Terrible. They don't know what they're doing. This is going to make my job harder. And it actually isn't.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a tough position to be in.
Yeah, yeah. It's so funny. That's in every project too. And it's like the ones that are not engaged, and then they realize that they're behind. It's kind of like being in a class. So they're falling behind in the project, and they get re-engaged, and they realize they're behind. And then it's like they defend it. They're just naturally going to get defensive, and then that's when that whole thing starts, right?
Right.
So it's like, it's important for a Kainos type implementer to bring them all along to you if they can, but you're right. Like, hard to say, but sometimes not everybody's going to come along with it. And you can't lead the company back on technology because such and such doesn't like it, you know?
Right.
And that is hard to say, but that's, you're very accurate, right?
Greater good.
Any other questions?
Great.
1 minute. Okay.
Good.
Well, great. So should we summarize? So we'll, that's a little bit on building the business case, right? So
good.
Yeah.
I hope it was helpful for sure. It's a lot.
Great. Yeah. And our third part of this series will be on the actual ERP selection process, right? So we're going to be going through kind of the steps, right? From like narrowing down the vendors, as we've talked about before this, to the RFI, RFP, demos, all these different steps, right? So that should get everybody an idea of what they're in for when they're looking for a new ERP system. Thank you all.
Thank you.